Good morning, everyone. It's my pleasure to convene today's JTAX committee. We have three proposals before us. I'm going to change the agenda just a little bit. And before I do that, I'd like to introduce my guest today, Alex Campbell, sitting right there. He is a Sprague student who is job shadowing me, and I'm sure he'll be fascinated with the discussion this morning. Can you imagine walking into this? Welcome, Alex.
Or else.
At any rate, I'm going to change the order and start today with the second item and open a public hearing on House Bill 2936A, which is concerned with transportation and woody biomass. And Paul, if you'd introduce it, we have guests.
Madam Chair and Committee, we have House Bill 2936A, which has come to the Joint Committee. What it does is expand the current biomass tax credit to include a credit of $4 per green ton for the transportation of woody biomass from forest management operations to biofuel producers. It also extends the sunset on the biomass credit, which is part of your sunset process, January 1, 2012. This bill would extend that sunset to January 1, 2019 and include the expansion of the credit to cover transportation costs.
Thank you. Any questions of Paul? We have Representative Thompson and Representative Springer have joined us today. Welcome to the JTAX committee, as we're called.
I'm smiling this morning only because you people have this responsibility and not me.
Oh, well, health care is an easy issue area.
Compared to tax credits. Yeah.
Madam Chair, if it pleases you, do you mind if I bring one of our witnesses up right now? If Stephen would join us up here. He's by far the expert here. Unless Jim,
you can go in any order.
Okay. I'm going to be very brief this morning because we have the certifiably smart people who are going to be coming in that can give you more detail. House Bill 2936.
For the record, Representative.
Thank you. For the record, I'm Jim Thompson, State Representative for House District 23, which is Willamina, Sheridan, down to Harrisburg, and about the western half of my district is trees. So this is a subject that is very important to me. House Bill 2936 is a bill for a tax credit to be given for the transportation of woody biomass, and that's an important distinction. We have for a number of years worked with this, and it's always the transportation piece that becomes the problem because it governs how far we can effectively move biomass to get these new generation electrical facilities up and running. And so we're trying to get enough flexibility in to be able to produce feedstock for the relatively small number of these and work out all the bugs of the technology as we go. So it's a very important piece. It focuses neither on the collection of woody biomass nor the utilization of woody biomass in the production of power, but the transportation of the biomass from the collection site to the plant. Oftentimes, this is done by a different group of people. So the people collecting it on the ground, the people hauling it, and the people generating power are not necessarily the same people. The amount of credit, $4 per bone dry ton, is in addition to the credit that is available for the collection of biomass, collection and stacking, or the production of energy. And that's another distinction because, again, this goes to the people who are actually trucking the material from one place to another. The biomass power industry provides a number of environmental and social benefits in addition to its production of electricity that exceed the benefits provided by any other form of renewable energy. The benefits include, among others, air quality improvements, reduction of greenhouse gas emissions, lessening of burdens on landfills, lessening of forest wildfire risk, and a provision of rural jobs. And, of course, I'm sure all of you are aware jobs in rural Oregon are at a premium these days. Jobs in all of Oregon are at a premium, but the rural areas have been hit particularly hard. Recognition of the intrinsic value of renewable energy in the regulated utility environment is strong and has allowed the construction of biomass power plants that sell electricity to the consumer power grid. We have to continue to recognize that biomass power, along with other renewable energy sources, cannot compete in a market that counts nothing except lowest price per kilowatt hour. It is this situation where we as legislators need to support and augment biomass utilization, getting the fuel from the forests and to the facilities so we can ensure the continuation of the substantial environmental and social benefits utilizing biomass as a fuel source of power. And with that, I thank you for your time. And
I think we'll hold questions until we've heard from Representative Springer. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Sherry Springer, State Representative for House District 17. And I think Jim, Representative Thompson here did a great job of laying out some things for us. And Stephen Lawn here is really the expert in the field that's going to talk to you. So I just want to maybe pull a couple pieces together for the committee. And that is just a very, very brief outline, because I've been out to some of these sites. I've been to the collection projects. And so in our forests, whether it be state or federal or private forest, you have the residual of the logging operation, typically a thinning operation, which has in the past usually been burned on site, which we do need to clean up that forest floor because that is fuel for fires, for our catastrophic fires. And so that is the collection portion. From there, they bring in the equipment, usually big tub grinders, different kinds of grinders, and grind it up, and it becomes then still a green product. And I'm not saying green because it's environmental, it's still wet. And then it's transported to the collection facility. And so I have, or processing facility, which I have Ferrara's Lumber, a couple of them actually in my district, and they process it, and they sell some of that electricity back to the grid. And they, of course, pull off some of that to run the steamers. So I think it's a very smart way to do business, quite frankly, with a product that is left in the forest to either rot or to be burned. So the tough part with that is that transportation piece. And there are tax credits for the collection and for the processing. And the tough piece for them is that transportation. And I'm hesitating now, and I'm not going to go any farther about that transportation piece because I know Steve's going to do that as far as the road structure that they use and the different areas that they find themselves in to do this. But I want to share with you a conversation that I had with a state representative from Colorado many months ago when I was working on this in the interim. And I know they had done some different things in their legislative body. And so I was talking to her, and I said, tell me what's going on in Colorado and what you're doing with biomass and why. And it was actually a very disconcerting conversation with her. Very bright woman. And she has worked a lot on this, a Democrat, and done some great work. And she said, this is where we are in Colorado. Our forests are dying. It is not pretty. And I'm not being an alarmist here. I'm conveying her story. She said, it's pretty hard to build a 100-year forest plan when your forest is dying and you're not doing anything about it. And the worst part about that is the infrastructure in Colorado. So why do I bring up infrastructure? She relayed to me that in the recent past, and the last, it's probably been more than a year now since our conversation, there was a Forest Service bid that came up for sale. And I remember back in the 80s being in Eastern Oregon and everybody scrambling to bid on those trees. Nobody bid. There was no bid in Colorado on this forest sale. I said, that's ludicrous. Why? I can't imagine that. She says, we're losing our infrastructure in Colorado. We're losing our infrastructure, and we don't have the people to bid on it anymore. So I'm not saying it's gone. I'm not saying it's past repair. I'm not in charge of their policies in Colorado. So that concerns me in Oregon because we have places, as I said, I used to live in Eastern Oregon, we have places like Prairie Wood Products that last I heard wasn't holding on as well as they had been. It's up and down if they're running, and John's here to talk a little bit about that, I think, today. Part of this bill is also a study of infrastructure, of these mill sites, which are great processing plants for biomass. And so as we talk about the transportation tax credit piece, which, quite frankly, has been pared down a lot, and Steve and I and a couple others had a really tough conversation in one of the conference rooms one day, and I said, you have got to get that number down. It has to be incredibly bare minimum. Doesn't do us any good to offer something that doesn't get us where we need to be. I said, but it has got to be as low as possible. And so anyway, I'm going to leave it there. There's lots of holes that I know Steve's going to do a great job setting the bar high here, do a great job filling in for us. And, of course, at the end, I'm willing to answer any questions that you may have.
Well, let's see if there are any questions for our representatives before we go forward. Welcome, Mr. Lawn.
Thank you.
Please identify yourself for the record.
For the record, my name is Stephen Lawn. I'm the business operations manager for T2 Inc., biomass collector and processor based out of Sweet Home, Oregon. We work throughout the state. Madam Chair and members of the committee, I appreciate the opportunity to allow me to talk about this bill and to ask for your support for this bill. I understand that the environment we're in today, tax credits is a very tough issue, and I'd like to talk to you a little bit about the tax credits that the state has already invested in and how we've utilized those, and then going forward and where we see this investment in biomass by the state, and I think the benefits. We are definitely one of the companies that work throughout rural Oregon. We provide the biomass to these cogeneration facilities so they can generate renewable energy. Some of the benefits, other than jobs, are definitely the forest health, the reduction of air pollution, because you're not open burning this material, but you're actually putting it to use and generating energy. Energy is a tough thing in Oregon. We have definitely cheap electricity rates. So, you know, generating just electricity is tough, but also they're getting the thermal use out of this and running, in a lot of places, running their kilns and getting extra bang for the buck by getting the heat and the electric generation at these facilities. So the we're a company that has utilized the tax credits that are asked to be extended. We also work with a lot of the trucking companies that would benefit from the transportation, though that wouldn't go directly to us except for the trucks that we directly have moving the material. We work with a lot of subcontract trucks, independent trucking companies throughout the state, Eastern Oregon, Central Oregon, Southwest, and West Oregon. And those people were having a very hard time. Representative Springer talked about infrastructure. We're having a very hard time with the infrastructure of the small truckers. Increases in just about everything across the board, including about a 26% increase in fuel since the 1st of January. But we're looking at moving material long distances to the facilities that are there, but we're also looking at facilities that are trying to come into Oregon, make hundreds of millions of dollars worth of investment to put plants throughout the state, which would definitely, when they come online down the line in years, will reduce the amount of transportation that we have to get this product to those facilities. But in the interim, you know, we have to move this material a long distance, and the transportation is definitely a hard part of those costs. So these tax credits basically will allow us to have the benefit of those truckers who will get this tax credit to be able to survive and to thrive. And there's a lot of resource out there, and there's also a demand for this. It's just a matter of getting that to the homes and the jobs that are associated with that. When we were looking at the tax credits that are existing, there was an issue of those maybe going away, or the eligibility of that, as we were working through the rulemaking committee. And because of that uncertainty, last year in May, we ended up laying off 30 people. Some of those were independent truckers. Some of them were our own employees. And because of the uncertainty of that, and then when the tax credits were basically, we understood where they were going to be and were in place, we tried to hire a lot of those positions back. And what we found is even after 3-4 weeks, some of those trucking companies did not make it through. So now we're having to replace that, you know, that trucking infrastructure either ourselves or try to find some other independents. Unfortunately, it's that tight. So these are beneficial to, I think, the industry, and when we're looking at the where people are looking at biomass energy as a stable energy source, a renewable energy source, and when we see that the investment is going to be made, it's a resource that Oregon definitely has in all in all the districts. And if that investment's going to be made by the private investors at levels of tens and hundreds of millions of dollars, you know, we want to be there to support that industry and to feed it. I think what I'll do is just leave it for questions. I'm sure there's plenty. Thank you.
Did you have something? Madam Chair, could I add something to that just real quick here? So one of the conversations we've had, many of us throughout this process, and I've asked the question a couple times, we are already moving biomass. So then why do we need a tax credit to move biomass? And I think that's a question probably all of you do or should have on your minds. And it's certainly one that I had. And so I posed that question to Steve, and he started talking about access to some of the collection sites that are out there. There is greater availability than we have, than they have, the ability and the resources to access. And a piece of that, and I'm going to have Stephen capture a little of that for me here, if he will, in just a second. A piece of that is a lot of these sites on the eastern side of the state can be utilized, but a Sweet Home company does not want to go to Prairie City. It doesn't make sense. Now, it doesn't mean a Sweet Home company will, but it means companies in the central part now have a greater viability. Can you maybe capture that a little bit better for me?
Yes. I mean, there's, you know, the biomass resource, because of the forest health and the forest conditions, there's a lot of overgrown stands. There's a lot of fire risk and throughout all the forests, and whether that be state, federal, or private. But the gap is these tax credits basically allow us to broaden the specter of what projects can be done and which ones can't. And so when you're looking at the investment that's being made, it's not that we're just putting money in the pocket, so to say. It basically, can we hire more people? Can we do more work? And that's what's going on. And I would be remiss if I didn't say that we are basically bullish on biomass, and that's what we do. And we've hired, basically we went from 21 employees in 2009 to 30 employees in 2010. We've hired 6 employees this year. We're looking at expanding because the work is out there, and it's basically these tax credits will allow more work to be done. And as we have those greater distances, we definitely are doing work in Eastern Oregon, and when Prairie City does have the cogen facility, that makes sense to be working next to their mill and bringing them in the material. We have to work, throughout the state, and basically these tax credits allow us to go into more areas and to bring it in. And, we get calls all the time with people who are looking to put new cogen facilities, especially in Central Oregon right now, where there's a large resource of overgrown forests that need a lot of work. And they're coming to us, and I want to say we will be there 10, 20 years down the road to supply you when you make that big investment in those plants. And we'll be much closer to those facilities when they come online. But to date, we're going long distances to get to the facilities that we have.
Thank you. Panel, questions for this panel? From the committee, Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've been looking at the materials that appear to have come forward from the previous committee, and I wonder, since I see this is the A version of the bill, I suspect some of these things have been dealt with, but perhaps you can help me. Mr. Repine from the department sent a letter on March 10th, which he attached a page called Things to Consider. And there are nine items on that set of bullets. I wonder if those things were considered in the earlier committee and if they're reflected in the amendments that were adopted.
I'm Madam Chair and Representative Barnhart, I'm in a little bit of a loss because I'm not looking at the same document that you have right now. I can speak to some of those if you don't mind sharing that with me or capture a couple of them. I know in general that a few of those were looked at, and I
think
there's
going to bring it over to you now
that resulted from it.
Yeah, that looks like it.
Thank you. Okay, a couple of these.
A couple you already acknowledged. The first one, for example, about receiving more than one credit for the same biomass. So you've already explained that part. But I wonder if you can deal with some of the others.
You know, some of these are issues I've heard consistently from the Department of Energy regarding woody biomass and other tax credits and Betsy issues and lots of issues. And so I think the best way, we've had conversations with them, some we agree on, maybe some we don't. I would be more than happy to go back and do some work on these, and we'll continue to work on them. I think some we might stay at a disagreement, some we might move a little closer. If there are amendments or ideas that you have, Representative Barnhart, that could create a greater comfort level, I'd love to have those conversations and figure out if we can get to a good place there.
Well, if I could follow up, thank you. In tax credits, as we've learned painfully over the last several years, the devil's in the details. The state can spend a lot of money for no useful purpose simply by missing a definition. And so that's why this stuff becomes quite important. One of the things that Mr. Repine noted is that the definition of woody biomass is very broad and will make it difficult to determine what is eligible and what is not eligible under the expanded program. And I wonder if that issue is addressed in the Agriculture Committee, and if so, what the results of that deliberation was.
Chair Berger or Madam Chair and Representative Barnhart, Steve's whispering in my ear over here at the same time too, and I can give you a better answer here on the last 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. It looks like approximately seven issues. Those were generation and equipment issues, which are amendments. I don't remember which dash, but we're looking at the engrossed here. I believe in large part, if not completely, those have been addressed in the amendments that became the engrossed version, but I think probably the Department of Energy would rather speak for themselves on that and their comfort level there.
Are we hearing from them?
We can. I believe they're here.
Yeah, I'm sure they're going to be testifying.
Oh, okay.
I thought I saw Mr. Repine. Then I probably should wait on the rest of these. We have quite a few testifiers.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate that.
Further questions for this panel? Appreciate you coming. Thank you.
Thank you,
Mr. Lawn. We have three. What to do with that list? There it is. Three folks who have come from quite a ways away to speak to us: John Redfield, Michael Bull, and Levi Chamberlain. Did I get the names right? Yes. Would you come forward? And Michael Bull, come forward. And John Redfield, you've signed up to testify. John Redfield, come on.
This is me.
Levi? Were you planning to?
No.
This is a very simple process, gentlemen. We ask that you give your name before you speak, and then speak your whatever you'd like to tell us, and then we get to ask you questions about your testimony, and we welcome you here. Any order.
All right. My name is John Redfield. Thank you for the opportunity to come here and speak. I represent D.R. Johnson Lumber Company, Prairie Wood Products, Cogen Co., Cogen 2, three of which facilities are currently non-operational. We support this bill, and it would enable us to maybe have a more definite approach to bringing people back to work in those facilities. Currently, those two facilities, three facilities are down. The cogens are tandem with sawmills, which are one supports the other, particularly in eastern Oregon. The Prairie Wood Products Stud Mill would employ approximately 55 people. The cogen facility employs 14 to 15 people, both of which are down as a result of market downturns and uncertainties on biomass availability right now. So that's two huge factors for us that are keeping us from opening the doors and putting people back to work in a community that's pretty well decimated right now. So.
Thank you. I'll let all three of you speak, and then we'll invite questions. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and representatives of the committee. My name is Michael Bull with Wood Byproducts Consulting out of Eagle Point, Oregon, which is down in the Rogue Valley area. Our firm offers consulting services to over 40, you'd define them as producer collectors under the old biomass rules. Companies that are out involved primarily in the wood biomass industry, taking biomass out of the forest, but we also have a number of clients that grow seed crops such as canola that's converted to biodiesel, as well as clients that convert waste grease to biodiesel, as well as dairy farmers that take manure to digesters. I don't want to be redundant and waste time, but I would definitely echo everything that's been said up to this point, that we completely support these credits. We support the biomass industry and looking for alternative ways to get off of fossil fuels. And obviously in Oregon, we have an abundance of wood and wood that's rotting in the forest. And if you look at the number of acres that are in Class 3 forest danger that need to be treated, that are overgrown, It just makes sense. It makes sense that this is one of Oregon's primary renewable resources, right up there with hydroelectric power. I think I can speak for a number of our clients in saying that we don't want to be subsidized by the state. We don't want to have ongoing help. But in order to get the infrastructure in place, the number of biomass facilities, so that the radius from those facilities makes economic sense to get the biomass there in a processed manner, that these credits being extended, we believe, will aid in that process and get this industry to stand on its own 2 feet. It'll also bring the stability that we need to know that for the next number of years, as people are locking up long-term contracts to harvest this biomass, to transport it in, as gas prices and different prices fluctuate, this will provide the long-term stability needed so companies will come in and invest the tens of millions, the hundreds of millions, to build these biomass facilities throughout the state. So, again, we just completely support it. We've seen what it's done for the rural communities, and we hope the members of this committee will get behind it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Chair and representatives, my name is Levi Chamberlain, and again, thank you for the opportunity to testify.
You can move
today.
That over it. There you go.
I feel much of this data I would be sharing.
And your name?
Levi Chamberlain of Wood Byproducts Consulting.
Okay, thank you.
Pretty much all the data I would be sharing would be redundant, and I'd be fearful of wasting your time. But, you know, the necessity of these credits is there, as I'm sure you're going to hear many more people testify today.
Thank you. And you are not wasting our time, gentlemen. You are Oregon citizens, and we value that you have come all this way to speak to us. So believe me, you are not in any way wasting our time.
Thank you.
Questions? Representative Juan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I want to get my my mind around what products you guys produce out of the biomass that you pull from the forest. So can you just kind of run down a list of garden variety fuels that you make?
As for our company, we produce steam, which runs dry kilns, dries lumber, and we produce power out of the cogen facilities.
And may I follow up?
Yes.
And do you do that by burning it or by compressing it or?
Burning.
All right. I would say that's typical of the wood products that are coming out of the forest. It's in a wood chip form, and it's typically chipped in the woods on a logging landing, trucked to a biofuel facility, similar to what D.R. Johnson operates. It's then burnt in a boiler system. They use that heat to produce steam. The steam goes for use in their dry kilns. That steam also oftentimes turns turbines. It creates electricity. Sometimes that electricity is used within that facility itself, and then also oftentimes it's sold back to the grid, which would be the case with Biomass 1. It's a 30-megawatt producing plant that sells all of its electricity right back to the grid. And one further thing, you know, the additional $4 a green ton tax credit primarily affects this woody biomass. The extension of the tax credits and the sunsetting of the bill affects greatly a lot of canola seed farmers in Northeast Oregon. A lot of those farmers called earlier on this year is, are these tax credits going to be available next year? A lot of times the crushing process that they're going through, they'll sell the seed come fall, but that seed doesn't actually get crushed and a tax credit generated until the following year. And so that was a huge concern that these farmers had. And I know a number of farmers who did not plant canola because they were not sure of this bill passing or the sunset being extended. That's a huge part in this bill. Plays a part in that whole industry.
Yes, one more thing I might add. Biomass facilities provide baseload power, unlike wind and solar. They are typically 95 to 99% uptime, so it's something that you can count on. You can turn it on and off with a switch. It's there. It's readily available at all times. So,
Thank you. Further questions from these gentlemen?
Thank you very much. Thank you for coming. Thank you for coming forward. We appreciate your testimony. I'm going to call Jody Weiser and Bill Cluding. I know that you're not exactly going to give similar testimony, but if you come up together, it would save a little time. Generally, we try and bring people together of like interests, but you folks know this.
Neither of us brought 18 other people with us. So, FACTS, Jody Weiser with FACTS Ernest, Oregon. We've already committed $275 million to this industry. And we are already subsidizing everything from the collection of a stack of wood or the cutting of a tree if it happens to be farmed to the purchasing of the product of the industry. We're already covering the cost of the machines that ship the equipment or transport the equipment and the facilities that create the biomass. So this legislation adds more to that without there being economic analysis that tells us anything about the profitability of the businesses, the way they're operating. Well, you heard from Mr. Lawn that his operation has grown from a small business to a decent-sized business. I wasn't sure the numbers, but 30 or 36 people that he now employs since 2006. That's success. That's working, or you wouldn't be growing. So it's not clear what the problem is that's being addressed. Further, just recently in Eugene, The Seneca, Aaron Jones, just made a huge commitment in the biomass facility. He has forests from which he can bring this biomass. He would not have made that huge commitment if he wasn't going to make money without another $4 per ton. Wouldn't have gone there. He's an able business person. So, again, what's the problem being solved? That business has already received $10 million for Betsy for 11 positions. If those jobs happen to pay $70,000 a year, it would take 238 years for the taxes from those employees to pay back the subsidy that we've already given to that biomass facility. We'll already be paying $10 a ton for the cutting and transport of the biomass from one place to the other. And I'm not positive. It'd be interesting to know, do we pay for the transport from the sawmill on the track that he's built that goes over to where the biomass is actually created or not? I don't think so. I think it's only the transport with a truck, but it's unclear. And the talk always about biomass is about the biomass that's in forests that might cause fires, even though we've heard testimony that they're not going to get to much of that land because it's inaccessible where that stuff that might burn is. And we have timber being farmed in eastern Oregon, wood that's being farmed in order to be turned into energy, and that's just to stand the trees. We're already going to undoubtedly pay to cut and transport those trees. Do we need to give it another $4 per green ton to do it? I think the bill includes a study, and the study is about facilities, and there used to be a piece in the study that's been removed that said that they would look at the tax advantages, the property tax advantages, and others that were already being given. And it seems to me that study should look at that information about whether we need to continue subsidizing it or not, rather than just look at the feasibility of where should we site the next plant that we need to subsidize. And finally, we heard that this is a temporary need, and yet it's a tax credit that's being extended for 8 years. That's 2 years beyond normal. Doesn't seem temporary. And it doesn't allow you a chance to use what you would learn from a study to make a decision that's based on facts about where you need to go. The advocates are all here for very good reasons. It will increase their profitability. But that's not your job. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions from Jody? Thank you, Jody. Bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Bill Clothing Carpenters Industrial Council and Committee. I can't dispute what the experts are saying. I do know you folks have a tough, tough job ahead of you. But I will tell you about this bill. If it saves one mill, it's going to be worth it. I've been on the previous governor's biomass federal forest advisory committee, and we've studied this issue. We know there's room in this state for 8 to 9 cogeneration plants. There's not a spot on this state that you can't touch where we haven't lost a mill. Or I've lost members, over 1,000 members in the last 2 years. And that's not counting the almost 500 paper mill workers. I can guarantee you, if we can create these jobs, we'll have the workforce. We have the workforce. They're not working now, I guarantee you. But if we can save one mill, if we can put 50 or 60 people to work at each one of these cogeneration plants, I know this is a new program, but I feel it is a very necessary part to make this work. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. Questions for Bill? Thank you both for coming, and thank you for sitting together. Greg Peden and Link Cannon, do you want to come up together? Okay, we'll let him be the end of this. We'll end with the slideshow.
Madam Co-Chair and members of the committee, I'm Greg Peden. I'm here representing a company called HM3 Energy, which is based in Gresham. They are owned by a gentleman named Dr. Hiroshi Morihara. Some of you I know have met and know Dr. Morihara very well. I want to give you a little bit of a background on his company, where they are, where they fit into this conversation. They certainly support this legislation, and I think hopefully in future hearings, Dr. Morihara himself will be here to share with you a little bit about what he's doing. HM3 Energy is a biomass manufacturing company. They've been in existence for just a couple of years. They are a brand new company. They have about 7 employees, primarily folks who come from the forestry, engineering, and chemical background. And what they have begun to produce is something called torrefied biomass, where they essentially, from a very simplistic sense, superheat woody biomass or agricultural biomass or even urban wood waste in a furnace that they've developed and in the absence of oxygen. And what this does is compresses this the biomass product into a briquette or a sort of a hockey puck looking type of material. And the intention behind their product is to be able to replace, on a one-for-one basis, coal at a coal-fired generation plant, like Boardman or like the plant up in Centralia. They have spent the first couple years of their existence perfecting this process, and they have tested it extensively at a place called Western Research Institute, which is a coal industry facility in Wyoming where they test all of the energy efficiencies and all of the emissions and all of those things of coal. And they've been out there and have tested their product in that scenario and have come out extremely well. The level of emissions that are produced from their product are virtually zero. Just as significantly, they have tested percentages of mixes with their product with coal in a coal-fired generation plant. So, for example, mixing into the furnace a 10% biomass, 90% coal, 40%, 60%, 50-50, and converted it all the way up to 100% biomass. And we know from those tests, and I can supply those results to any of you who would like to read them, that the product works. They have now begun the process of raising capital to build facilities and really build their business. They have been in conversations with the city of Prineville about building their first full-scale biomass facility out there. They have conversations with Portland General Electric about testing their product at Boardman. Same thing with the plant in Centralia. So they are really a very interesting part of this conversation, and the technology that they have created is very unique. And it is Dr. Morehar has applied for patents for this technology. And is he here?
Yeah, he's right behind you.
But I wasn't sure that he was in the room. We are very excited about the opportunity. But given the stage and the steps that where the, I believe this industry is and where their company is specifically, some incentives like this, particularly around the transportation costs that I think other folks have testified who are more experienced with the dynamics in that dynamic part of the industry, are needed to really kickstart this industry. And the exciting piece of what Dr. Morehar is doing is we're starting here in Oregon. He's an Oregon citizen. They're an Oregon company. But the product can really be expanded ultimately across the country in any coal-fired generation plant or really around the world. So it's an exciting technology. It's right here in Oregon, and it's something that I encourage you to support. Thank you.
Mr. Peden, I'm going to let Mr. Cannon give his presentation, and then if your client would like to come forward, we'd welcome him.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, Link Cannon, Oregon Forest Industries Council. I'm not going to start this yet. I could talk for quite a while addressing some of the issues I've heard this morning some things I'd like to say. I'll try to keep my comments brief. I would like to comment on the Seneca project. I don't know how many of you folks have had the opportunity to go down and see their facility. If you haven't, I would volunteer that they'd be happy to have you come down and see what they're doing down there. It's state of the art. And in terms of these transportation tax credits, 75% of Seneca's materials are supplied internally from their mill. They're actually moved with a big conveyor belt directly from the mill to the fuel storage house, so none of these credits would apply to that. The other 25% come from their own private lands in their long-term strategic plan, and that's a reflection of the part of the problem here is fuel supply and the massive amount of fuels available on federal lands that are not accessible because of federal policy. So that's a problem with the biomass situation generally, and we hope that'll change, and there's a lot of people working on that. And on the Representative Wand left, so I won't sort of enumerate the technologies, but torrefaction is one, and there's a number of other ones that it's not a one-size-fits-all. There's a lot of different ways of skinning the cat, if you will, in terms of technology. We're here to support the bill. I also, like Bill Cluding, was a member of the Oregon Forest Biomass Work Group, run by ODO, Department of Energy and Department of Forestry. I know the two guys that are from those departments that are on that committee are not here because they're in a biomass workshop out in La Grande today. So this stuff is out there happening. I'd like to give you one statistic kind of leading into this and something to keep in mind as we're talking about tax credits. There was a study done at the University of Massachusetts Political Economy and Research Institute in 2009 that found that biomass job creation per $1 million of investment was 7.5 direct jobs, 5 indirect jobs, and 5 induced jobs. For every $1 million of investment, it creates 17 jobs. And that's, we're not talking about tax credit investment, we're talking about private investment. So to the extent that these credits support and drive private investment, you do get a return for your investment in terms of jobs and tax revenues. I don't know if you, the committee has had made available to them, and if not, I will certainly do so. The Forest Health and Biomass Energy Transition Team recommendations to Governor Kitzhaber. Governor Kitzhaber called this out as a specific area of interest in his administration, and he had a transition team work on this. And these tax credits are addressed in this as in this report. In big picture, they talk about. Have you folks seen that report?
No, and we would appreciate you. Okay. You can send it Thank to you. Us electronically or.
Sure, I'll send it to Paul. They talk in there about the sort of state of the industry and how we can develop it. It is really, in one sense, it's a very old industry in that mills have been using their own biomass internally for a long time to generate electricity. In the other, another sense, it's a very new industry in that we're starting to try and access fuel sources that financially have not been accessible before, and we're trying to build the infrastructure and create a new industry where some of our old industry has disappeared. So these tax credits are part of that recommendation. They support this. They support limiting regulatory barriers, and we have been working on some other bills to do that. I guess the bottom line is we need to develop demand and supply, and we're not there yet. You heard that we would like the industry to be able to stand on its own. That's the hope. But in order to do that, the industry needed and infrastructure need to be created. And
Mr.
I think
Kennedy,
you'd like to move me along.
Yes, I would. And also, we were talking about a specific proposal, and I think
right.
you're getting into
thank you.
Some other things. So
yes.
I am sort of reining you in a bit.
Madam Chair, thank you. And my purpose here is just to put it in context. I understand, you know, I understand. And all I'm what I'm trying to do is say there's in the, how it fits in the bigger picture, if you will. And you've had enough of that, so I'll move to my slideshow. This is something we worked with the Oregon Forest Resources Institute and Department of Forestry to create. This is a picture of what's happened to the industry and facilities and jobs in the state over the course of the last 30 years. The point is not, oh, poor us, although it's a pretty sad picture. The point is there are a lot of, as you'll see, over 200, 250 industrial sites that are out there available for development. There's a workforce that's out there looking for something to do. You've heard about infrastructure in Eastern Oregon. This demonstrates that pretty dramatically. So I guess the point of this is not what's happened, but the opportunities that this presents going forward in terms of biomass. So, I hit next. Run. Resume.
Resume.
Okay. And with luck,
this
the sound
slide
will run.
Show documents the decline in forest products manufacturing infrastructure and employment during a 30-year period in Oregon from 1980 to 2010. Each year is depicted on a map that shows the location of an open forest products mill as a yellow dot. Forest products mills include sawmills, veneer mills, plywood mills, and pulp mills, but not paper mills. A bar graph on the lower right of each slide shows total mill employment for that year as a yellow bar. This is employment in primary forest products facilities only and does not include loggers, truckers, foresters, contractors, and the indirect employment generated by the forest sector. As mills close, the yellow dots are replaced by black dots, and the yellow employment bar shortens against the benchmark of the gray bar of 1980 employment. The data source is Paul Anger and Associates. In 1980, there were 405 open mills in Oregon, employing 45,778 workers. By 1985, there were 354 open mills, employing 40,192 workers. In 1990, there were 313 open mills, employing 36,693 workers. By 1995, there were 225 open mills, employing 27,768 workers. In 2000, there were 175 open mills, employing 23,715 workers. By 2005, there were 135 open mills, employing 19,566 workers. In 2010, there are only 106 open mills, employing 15,706 workers. In 30 years, we have lost 3/4 of our forest products manufacturing mills and 2/3 of our workers. These mill closures and job losses are due to several factors, including modernization of mills and changes in the economy. But the overriding cause is the reduction in timber harvest. In 1980, Oregon's timber harvest was 6.6 billion board feet. In 2009, it was 2.7 billion board feet. Most of this reduction occurred on federal forest lands. The black dots represent loss in our forest management infrastructure. Without these mills, there are fewer places to process logs, whose harvest is critical for active forest management to achieve healthy and fire-resilient forests. These closed mill sites also represent opportunities for development, such as community biomass conversion centers. These are established industrial sites with highway access. Many also have rail access and are on the electricity transmission grid. These closed mills could be used for local energy, local wood products, and local jobs.
I think there's the ending slide. And, Madam Chair, just one comment on that. This, I didn't mention at the beginning, but this is, I think, particularly germane to Section 6 of the bill, which is the biomass siting study. I think this shows the opportunity for expansion of biomass facilities in Oregon. So with that, thank you.
questions, comments? Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I think my question is primarily for Mr. Peden and Mr. Cannon, to the extent that you have input. I'd be interested in that as well. Speaking only for myself, although I think I speak for some other members of the committee, part of the purpose of tax credits, as we look at them, when, especially when they relate to business, is not to subsidize an industry, but to make an investment in an industry that then pays off over time and has other benefits to the state. So to that end, to what extent do opportunities like the one that you have described to the committee create a possibility of some sort of lasting permanent infrastructure, of a larger realizable project that translates into more of a cluster that leads to greater exports and that over time potentially could lead to a scale back or an ending of a tax credit because we have a healthy and viable industry?
Madam Chair, Mr. Co-Chair, the ultimate Oregon-based business plan for HM3 Energy would be to build upwards of 10 torrefaction facilities in key locations around the state, as others have described, at mills that are now closed or next to or close to where the biomass product would be produced, and be able to transport it to a place like Boardman or to Centralia or beyond. And at that stage, what you're seeing would be a fully functional industry and a fully functional business. We are certainly not there yet. So the
the opportunity to make that investment on behalf of the state to kickstart that industry and then see it blossom, I think, is tremendous. And I think that the initial investors in the industry and the in our company in particular see that as well. So I think that is a perfect example of how the tax credits are used in an appropriate manner.
Well, Madam Chair, a different line of questioning?
Sure.
Thank you. Mr. Cannon, your slideshow is dramatic, to say the least. And I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I'm trying to make sure that I understand. Is part of the rationale then for the transportation portions here that there has been a major change in the geographic and spatial location of production and processing in this industry, and that the industry is trying to adjust to transportation in that spatial and geographic change as it looks at new uses for the output from our forests. Is that correct, and is that a purpose of the tax credit to help offset that change?
Madam Chair, Mr. Co-Chair, feel free to put words in my mouth. I think you probably said it more elegantly than I could. I think the folks who are a good example was the gentleman from D.R. Johnson here. You know, they've managed to hang on over there where others have not. They're one of the few yellow dots left up there. But the advantage of cogeneration is, if you run it in conjunction with a mill, is that you're producing electricity, but you're also using the steam after it's driven through the turbine for industrial processes like drying timber and other things. So there's opportunities, you know, if we could rebuild the infrastructure. Yeah, that's the problem now, is the distances to manufacturing facilities are huge. So we need to get, whether it's torrefaction, you know, these folks can go out and put things in LeGrand and other places, but that's a key part of this, is to build the infrastructure to reduce the transportation issue, which is very, very, very large now for most of the biomass out there.
Thank you. Further questions? Mr. Cannon, I would encourage you, if you would, to post that on, if you have not, on YouTube, and give us a link that would make it available. It is a dramatic, to say the least, video, and Mr. Kluding has been saying this to me since I entered this building, and we all heard him, but I think that that video brings it home in a way that even Mr. Kluding couldn't.
Yes.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I enjoyed your video a lot, but since I live right in the middle of it, it's sometimes the obvious is overlooked. But it would be really interesting if you would add to it the added volume that's in our forest that has been growing while we've reduced that which we've been taking from it. I would like to see the bar going the other direction. It would be very interesting.
Madam Chair, Representative Bentz, it would be interesting. Part of the problem is with doing that is it's a more complicated story than that, particularly on federal lands, because not only are you growing a lot, but there's a lot of it dying. And that those relationships are difficult to sort of depict in simple bar graphs. But we'll go back and look at it and see if we couldn't. I think it's a good point.
Thank you.
Yes.
Just one quick question.
Senator.
Madam Chair. What's the risk of us growing an industry that EPA by rule would kill, given the carbon nature of biomass production, and by rule, the Supreme Court ruling they have the authority to regulate?
Madam Chair, Mr. Co-Vice Chair, this has been a bone of contention. I mean, it's sort of historically and in the Kyoto process, internationally and nationally, it's been pretty well acknowledged that the carbon emissions or emissions from biomass are carbon neutral. It's sort of been the state of the state, the Department of Energy, everybody's recognized that until just recently. And that there was a study done in Massachusetts that sort of raised the issue, and the EPA and the tailoring rule exacerbated that. They have, and this is very unusual for EPA, they've gone back and reopened the rulemaking on that and given it a 3-year hiatus. So we trust that EPA will arrive at a more logical conclusion. There's a lot of people who are feeling much more positive about it now. And I would note that the Oregon DEQ, or excuse me, EQC last Thursday in their greenhouse gas reporting rules did adopt language that said carbon emissions from biomass are not considered greenhouse gases for the purpose of their rules. So in Oregon, at least, the EQC has adopted a rule that says we are, the other piece of that is, unless preempted by federal law, which kind of goes without saying anyway. But so in Oregon, at least, we've recognized that, and we are hopeful. You know, if EPA goes sideways on that, it's going to be a huge problem for the biomass industry everywhere.
Further questions? Thank you very much. Anyone else? And if you'd like to bring your client forward, he doesn't have to.
I think he left.
Okay.
But I think we'll have the opportunity for
this
committee.
Thank you. Is there anyone else that wants to discuss this particular issue? Thank you very much. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2936, and I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3173, which is the long-term rural enterprise zone tax credit. Chris?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the bill, House Bill 3173, adjusts the sunset date for the long-term credit for rural enterprise zones. And the amount is blank.
Okay, thank you. Representative Bentz, you wanted to weigh in on this. Appreciate you coming forward.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Members of the committee, Cliff Bentz, Representative District 60. And I appear today in support of House Bill 3173, which would, of course, extend the sunset on the rural enterprise zones for an undetermined time as yet. It's really interesting, Madam Co-Chair, that you would bring this bill up immediately following what we just heard, because, of course, this zone is a modest attempt to try to offset some of the damage that has occurred as a result of the loss of these timber jobs. And I think you have materials in front of you, and I have some emails I'm going to hand out from folks across my district who have used this device to try to attract businesses. The ones that are most notorious right now are, of course, Facebook in Prineville and several other ones, Google in the Dalles. There's some material in here that suggests this is an Eastern Oregon device. It's also a Southern Oregon device, and I'm sure it's used in other places other than in addition to Eastern Oregon. I would simply say it is a modest offset to the loss of jobs. I wish we had something better to offer. It seems to be working. The folks I've asked, I contacted the county economic development coordinators in my four counties. To a person, they said they very much wanted to retain this device. And so the cost appears to be relatively modest. It appears to be a device that can be negotiated at the link. I would encourage the committee to look favorably upon it.
Thank you. Questions for the representative? Thank you very much. Paul Grove and Ann Hannes. Is Ann here? There she is. And Mr. Fish.
Chair Berger, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Paul Grove with the Oregon Business Development Department, Business Oregon. With me is Art Fish, our incentives coordinator with the department, and I believe we've submitted some written responses to the questions that the committee had asked with respect to House Bill 3173 in the long-term rural enterprise zone. Appreciate the opportunity to talk briefly about it. This program, as Representative Bentz discussed, is an important targeted tool that the department has used with respect to business development opportunities in rural Oregon. As Representative Bentz mentioned, it has been an important tool with respect to the project in the Dalles, project in Facebook, or in Central Oregon with Facebook. Also, in Southern Oregon, in particular with the Murphy Company. I believe that there's been written testimony submitted as well. We had the benefit of having John Murphy testify at our Ways and Means hearing 2 years ago to talk about the importance of this program in the company's decision to either, they faced three options, to rebuild, to locate elsewhere, or to do nothing, and this program was extremely instrumental in their decision to rebuild in Sutherland. And Murphy continues to grow with a new facility in Rogue River as well that has created 100 new jobs with the expectation of 100 more. So Arthur and Ann Hannes can answer some more specific details about the program, but here on behalf of the department to lend our support for the extension of this particular credit.
For the record, I'm Ann Hannes. I'm with the Association of Oregon Counties, and we strongly urge your support for House Bill 3173. This complements the efforts that local governments, counties, and cities are doing with regard to rural enterprise zones. And this tax credit is used sparingly because, one, it's aimed at very large investments, and it's aimed at investments that are going to create high-wage jobs in rural areas that have been hard hit, and it has to be approved by the governor. So there's limits on what the tax credit can be used for. On the other hand, when there is an opportunity for a very large investment coming to a rural area, that's not one that we want to pass up. And hence, having this tax credit available for a purpose like that is extremely important. You'll see that there's also letters of support that have been submitted by Judge Terry Tallman from the Morrow County, as well as Roseburg Lumber and the City of the Dalles. League of Oregon Cities was not able to be here today, but they also join AOC in support of this tax credit. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Questions for these folks? Yes.
Thank you. And I'm not sure this is the appropriate panel, but let me ask the question and you can tell me. The extension date is blank. What's the appropriate extension date and why?
I think we'd probably like to see about another 8 or 10 year extension of this, similar to I think what you're considering with other tax credits.
Well,
yes, go ahead.
I suspect you might like a 100-year extension.
Well, if you would give that to
But what's needed in order to affect the use of the credit during the time before the legislature next considers it? Is it one of these that we could do every 2 years like we do the forest tax? Is it one that needs 6 years or that has to have 8 years? And why?
Chair Berger, Representative Barnhart. In response to, I think, this question being presented at the policy committee level, we had recommended a 6-year extension in keeping with the other credits, and I think Arthur Fish can speak in a little more detail as to the time period associated with it and what we can and can't do.
Representative Barnhart, Co-Chair Berger, members of the committee, my name is Arthur Fish, Incentives Coordinator with Business Oregon, and I do wish to say it's a great honor here to appear before the Joint Committee on Tax Credits, and it was a pleasure to work on your questions and so forth, and I hope we can provide you with any input that helps in your deliberations here. With respect to the sunset issue, again, I do concur with Paul that there isn't a magic date here to extend it. I do feel that, the 6-year cycle is helpful at this point. This is a credit that sunsets based on really initial local certification in the rural zone. And that cutoff date is more than a year from now. So given that and the lags and stuff involved, this is not one that, unlike some credits where, we're running up against having problems. We can get people in if they came about. But nevertheless, I think, looking forward in terms of marketing, and these are marketing tools, and so you want to have a certain degree of time that you have to present and be able to make promises, some of which, we could be working with an opportunity that might be 2 or 3 years out, and, we don't necessarily want to crimp things too much. But the way this sunset is currently set up, it is fairly kind on that. But 6 years and what opportunities and how are things looking, what few projects maybe have occurred in that time would be, I think, a good time to get back to what we're doing today.
Thank you. That's responsive. I appreciate it.
Representative Benz.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. While we have a technical assistance available, I'm just curious, in the negotiation of the property tax credit, it's not less than 7 years, not more than 15. And I'm just curious what the focus is. I'm sure people want it for 15 every time, but is there some reason that you would not extend it to full 15?
Representative Benz, Co-Chair Berger, members of the committee. Yeah, we've had a handful of projects, and we've actually had a few projects that have negotiated to a greater extent than the ones that actually went to fruition. So, there is some reasonable experience, as I think we explored on your House committee in this regard. And there have been a few cases in Morrow County where they've only set it at 10 years. But generally, the companies obviously are looking for the full deal and they're looking at other states with 10 to 15 year exemptions somewhat more broadly available. And this has been an issue. And what are you going to do with future phases and so forth? So I think the build out of the facility feeds into that. But again, it's just one of those negotiation points, and you can trade it off with other issues. Probably a good many of these have entailed sort of fees or payments that are made to local efforts or local jurisdictions, sort of like the Strategic Investment Program as a model and others. And so that's just one of those things you trade off. But, I think with a company like Facebook, which was all done, and these were very close negotiations between the county and the city. And so somebody from the association here may be able to comment, but I think they like that freedom. And obviously with a very golden opportunity, they're more than willing to talk about the full 15, give or take some of those trade-offs.
Thank you. Further questions for this panel? Mr. Isselman, would you like to come forward? I note that you signed on the wrong line, and so you didn't get up there. My apologies. That's, and is there anyone right. else that would like to speak on this particular issue? Because there's room at the dais. Sorry.
Co-Chair Berger, Co-Chair Bailey, members of the committee. For the record, Jack Isselman appearing before you today on behalf of the Oregon Economic Development Association, representing Oregon's economic development professionals and communities throughout the state. I'm here today after trying to rally some of our members to come here and testify personally. The good news I have to bring to you today is they were all busy working on projects. And so you have some letters before you, one from Jason Carr, who's with EDCO in Prineville, another from Gary Neal, Portamoro, talking to the committee a little bit about their experience with this incentive. It's an important, to use the Hackney analogy, it's an important tool in their toolbox. They've come to rely on it over time. It's not always the deal they strike with the companies they attempt to recruit or retain, but it's a lure that gets them into a conversation. It has the added feature, which is somewhat unique among our incentives, of gubernatorial approval. And I can just tell you, based on past experience, personal experience, having the governor involved in some of these recruitments adds a certain panache to the effort, and this creates a nice opportunity to link the governor into these types of investments. So in addition to being a control over the incentive, it also adds a little bit of marketing flourish. So with that, you have a lot of data and detail before you, and I'm just here to express our strong support of this tax credit. We're not coming before you on too many tax credits. This is one that's of critical importance. The extension of the Enterprise Zone program overall and the e-commerce tax credit are really the three you'll hear us champion through the remainder of the session. So with that, I'm available for your questions.
Thank you. Questions for Mr. Isselman, who didn't have training on filling out forms.
Thank you very
much. Thank you.
Anyone else would like to speak on this? Members of the committee, I am going to be your hero today because I am going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3173 and move the public hearing on House Bill 3170 to next Tuesday's Tax Credit Committee. Apologies to those who have been waiting to come in on that one, but we have a similar Senate one on Tuesday, so it makes more sense to do it all at the same time. That would give us 15 extra minutes in our busy agendas, and so I'm a hero to you all. So, with apologies, Representative Barnhart, we did try to find Mr. Repine and were unable to. I would encourage you to speak to him in your office and anyone else. I'm sure he will answer questions.
Well, Madam Chair, if I may, I probably will ask him to add a written response to the material we've already got on the other bill, because he raised it in the other committee, and it'd be nice to know whether they addressed his issues or not.
And I would ask that it be sent to all of us.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you very much. We are adjourned.